started a series of Louisiana artists. The book is beautiful, as all the UL Press productions are. They do such a good job there, and all of their books feel good, they look good, and I'm just so happy to be holding this book and to having the two of you here in the studio. I think we're going to start off talking just a bit about how this series got started, Dennis, since you started the series. And then Philip, who photographed all of the paintings in the series, will talk about that process. So what was your idea behind this series, Dennis?
Well, I think, you know, I was so blessed with the, you know, I suggested to James that I wanted to use Mr. Gould to do photograph my works. And one of the things that I realized that, you know, it was a process of trying to get him, but he knew, first of all, I loved his other works and was familiar with his other works and the way he really respected the integrity of the images and the way he presented the work for what it is. And that just kind of opened my mind up to possibility, because I'm the kind of person that try to think more just about, not just about me, but about other people and other artists in the community.
Well, and you know what strikes me about the UL Press is that they are open to ideas like yours. They're open to ideas about Louisiana culture, Louisiana art, mm-hmm. and that they were interested in not only doing a book of your work, mm-hmm. but also thinking about it as a series, mm-hmm. and being able to do this with mm-hmm. other artists. Now, you know, Dennis, I know there are a lot of people who are listening in our audience who do know you and know your work, but I think we're going to go back just a little bit for those people who may not be as familiar mm-hmm. with you and your work. You're an artist, a visual artist. You're also a musician.
Yes.
And you play zydeco with your brother, Nathan. But let's go back to the art part about mm-hmm. how early you started drawing. I mean, I've read a few accounts of that. And mm-hmm. you were interested in art as a very young child.
Right. Well, my dad died when I was real young, and we were all brought up in a Catholic environment, school that had a particular perspective, you know. And when Dad died, we were transplanted, so to speak, to public school, you know, for economic reasons, and which brought on some challenges. And so I had to kind of I've always had that creative thing about me. That was always something that I felt comfortable with. And so as a kid, I used to collect, like, pieces of pencil. I always had a cigar box and collect pencils mm-hmm. and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And I liked, you know, typical thing of creative people, you know, rocks and objects and stuff like that that I thought was interesting. I might pick up something and bring it home and that kind of stuff. And so when I got into the environment with the challenges of having to make some adjustment, I went inside of myself, really. Mm-hmm. And that brought out some kind of a comfort for me, because, you know, I had something that expressed an aspect about me, even as a child, mm-hmm. that I felt made me feel like I had something to say, you know. Even at that early age.
What did you draw at that age?
A lot of figures. I drew figures. I drew some scapes of rocks and objects and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I kind of liked the idea, because I came from the Christian background. I was really inspired by Madonna figures and things that I seen that I thought was meant so much to my life. And so those imagery sort of made me comfortable. And so I would do a lot of Madonna figure. Mm-hmm. Of course, my mother had a lot to do with it too, because she had all those other children to raise along mm-hmm. with me and brother, sister. Mm-hmm. And so we had some interesting challenges. And I think subconsciously, that one of the reasons why I like the idea of Madonna's and mother and child, because I could relate to it. I saw the Madonna with my mother, and I saw how much she, you know, took things and made something out of nothing, and always taught us those principles, how that in life, if you have a vision, and that vision is real enough, that you can do what you, you can make it. Because she was making it, she had to make a transition from a stay-at-home mama to a mother who had to take on several jobs. And so that affected my work drastically. And being in another environment that didn't have the same way of looking at things, the same way of worshiping, some of them had no way of worshiping. And here I was transplanted into that environment. It's kind of like taking a plant. When you pull it out, it goes into shock because it's not used to the new soil. And so I was sort of transplanted into this environment. But by the grace of my belief and my direction, I used that as building blocks.
Well, you know, I find that really interesting that you're talking about having been drawn and drawing Madonnas at that very early age. But the fact that you talk about it also being your mother makes sense as well, because there is this incredibly peaceful, lovely strength to so many of the Madonna figures, the mother figures that are in this book that you've chosen, that you can feel that sense of, even though times must have been difficult at that time, that there was a security, that there was a peacefulness, that there was something enveloping you at that time.
Well, you know, my grandmother and my mother, you'd be surprised what silence can do. And when you quiet your spirit and hear the subtlety of what the mother, that inward thing that they have, that sensitivity that females have, that can light up more of those little dark passages that we sometimes have to deal with. And my mother was is a person that always had a can-do mentality. And she sort of she lived out the creed. It wasn't something that she said, look what I believe or look what I am. Her and my grandmother, they went out. They met the challenge. And it was like, to me, you know, in my art, with all the adversity that I've had as a visual artist, you know, you sort of learn to try to see the life lessons. And that's the greater part of my art, is that the idea is that it's very important to struggle. It's necessary to struggle, but it's also necessary to understand the meaning of the struggle.
Well, and I think anyone looking at these paintings, knowing your art through this book, would have a sense of the understanding of it rather than the struggle itself, that reaching back into the history you're talking about with your mother and the sense of safety and security and peacefulness and the quiet you're talking about, that sense of quiet instilled by your grandmother and mother. You sense all of those in these paintings. And I want to tell people who may just be tuning in, my guest is Dennis Paul Williams, the artist and musician. He's here with Philip Gould, and they're talking about a book that was just published by the UL Press called Soul Exchange, The Paintings of Dennis Paul Williams. How did you begin to choose the paintings that you put in here? I know you have a huge body of work, Dennis.
Right, right.
How did you, and maybe Philip or the UL Press, how did you begin to make those decisions about what would be in this book?
Well, you know, to be honest, I think I pulled out a bunch of series of paintings, and we went through a bunch of them, and knowing Philip the way Philip is the kind of a person that pretty direct and
diplomatic, though. I try.
Yeah. Well, you are diplomatic, but you direct, Philip. And the thing is, I work in series, and I think that's one of the things that for me is a strong point, because I tend to think in terms of works of art as a conversation, an ongoing conversation, a personal conversation, you know, trying to have some cohesiveness, you know, in my paintings, because that's why I like to work in series. It's kind of like making a sentence and completing it. Mm-hmm. And so Philip and I looked at different series of stuff at different period in time of my life. And I think we came to some decisions, and some decisions that we didn't come to, but they came to themselves. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, it certainly made me want to see more of these series. I mean, you chose some absolutely exquisite examples from the different series in the book.
Choices weren't always easy either.
I can only imagine that. I mean, anyone who's ever seen any of Dennis's paintings would know how lovely they are.
Dennis is incredibly prolific. My sense is, you know, painting in the whole creative process is part of his daily DNA, and it's just part of his life ritual that's ongoing. Mm-hmm. And so, I think in large measure, the paintings that ended up in the book represent his work, I think, well. And so I think it's a good... It's a body of work that has a cohesiveness as a book, and that's always the challenge, right? Is that, you know, you have a body of work. Okay, well, we need to sort of transform it into something that's between two covers and covers 160 pages, what have you,
and give a sense of your artistic life.
One of the things that speaking about Philip is that his prior work for me, spoke volume to me, because, first of all, he knows how to make a good book, really. I mean, for what it is, I think I've learned with this process something real valuable about publication, about presentation. So it's not just, for me, it's more than just have my work in the book. It's that I learned so much about, you know, what it takes to make a good book, and how to go about choosing the right kind of work, because the work has to work with each other when it's in the book. Okay, the painting might be good, and everything might be complete, but will it work with a large number of works? That's the whole idea, and I think that's what I learned. Quite a bit from Philip, that it has to work.
He certainly practiced at that, and the UL Press as well. I do want to mention, and we'll mention it again a couple times, there's a book signing for you and this book tomorrow afternoon from 4 to 6 at the University Art Museum, at the Hilliard University Art Museum. What a perfect setting to have a book signing for your book
museum.
Awesome. It's and you'll have all the books there. People can
we'll
buy
have
them
all the
and
books.
Sign them.
Absolutely. Okay. Dennis will be there. I'll be there. I think Daryl Bork, who did a piece, an essay in the book on it, is going to try to be there. I should also say that Dennis will have some of his art there as well. People can look at those pieces. And so I'm looking forward to the afternoon.
And I'd like to see something about Mr. Bork, Mr. Daryl Bork. We have a long history. I met Mr. Bork from the Significant Voices series. I was the artist who he was looking for an African-American artist to bring in, do the cover for mm-hmm. his program. Mm-hmm. And he had this concept of bringing African-American writers in from different parts.
Yes.
And him and along with Kathy Ball, who took over the program after he left. But anyhow, Mr. Bork was very instrumental in encouraging. And when he seen my work, he said, "Look, I really like your work, and I'd like to use your work and try to get the community to see my work." And in fact, he did a real, real beautiful job on a nice journal, the Callaloo. It was a 45-page essay. Mm-hmm. on my work, along with Charles Raoul, who's a professor, I think, at North Carolina somewhere. And it was quite a thing, because someone from a Florida, was in the lobby one day and picked up the Callaloo and read the article. And some older person that was getting ready to retire from Lakeland, Florida, read the article and contacted me there. And I got an exhibition from that in Florida. And
it's amazing the ripples that happen when people believe in us and put our work out
there.
Well,
it's cause and effect.
When you said Significant Voices, I hadn't thought about that series in a long time, but immediately that image that Daryl used came back. It was a gorgeous piece of art that really struck a lot of people and inspired a lot of people. Can we talk just a bit about your style?
Okay.
We talked a bit about your drawing as a child. But how did your style develop? What were you drawn to? You mentioned Madonna's early on, but your style is incredibly unique. The lines you use, the colors you use, how did that develop?
Well, I had a junior high art teacher who was quite instrumental in getting me to loosen up, so to speak. I would draw these real detailed portrait thing, and one day he told me, he says, you know, you really understand how to draw. He said, there's power in being able to suggest things. He said, sometimes even more power in being able to suggest a flaw than actually drawing the flaw. And I was drawn into that concept, and he sort of like this, you know, said, you know, it's not about the technique. You have that down pat. He said, what you need is a voice. And he says, that voice is in you. He says, you have to take that voice and you have to magnify it because you can't really hear it now. So all the years I had been practicing on gestural drawing, finding out how can I express the dimension without trying to have everything there to say, this is that. And that started me to, on the road of experimentation and that kind of stuff.
Well, when you say he mentioned that you can just suggest something, those are some of your pieces that I love the most, where there's just the suggestion of the figure and the colors, those bursts of lovely, both subtle and bright colors. This is an interesting mix. And just the piece that you chose for the cover, the accordion, the Zydeco Angel.
As if you like.
It's just beautiful. How did you all choose this piece? Because this, to me, says so much about your work, that just that gestural. You're not doing too many details, and it's just...
Well, Philip had an idea, and we had a lot of other choices, and this was colorful, and this was a combination of... what I do as a musician, a combination of what I do as an artist, and that was a very wise choice, the mere fact, because it's from the Zydeco Angel series, see.
But, so that's a series in itself. You have many of these.
Yeah, there's several in the book as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I want to mention something about gestural drawing. You know where I'm at now, Philip? I'm at the point where I'm starting to realize that I'm trying to get at the emotion more than anything else. You know, sometimes the facade is the stuff that really kills the work itself. You know, the emotion keeps it living for, it outlive us. But, and so as you get older as an artist, you try to, deal with the get to the root of the problem. And as an artist, you go through so many phases to try to get to that point where you figure that this is more of what I'm trying to do. And then when you get to that point, that's why you have to always evolve all the time. Because I'm compulsive with it, I got notebooks, sketchbooks, and I've been keeping them since the 70s almost, since...
I love the fact that you included some of those drawings, I guess, from your notebooks.
Right.
Here.
Right.
That's a really nice touch to have in the book there. And you have many of these notebooks?
Yes, he does.
Yeah. As with everything in this book, this just makes me and will make anyone who picks up this book and looks at it want to explore your work further. It's like a little tantalizing taste of your work, both the sketchbooks and the paintings
Well, one of the big things about the sketchbook for me is the idea is, when I growing up, I never had the finances to do things, so I had all these dream projects, and what I would do is I drew about them, and I wrote down little notes and little stuff. And today I have some of the, I'm doing better so I can eventually develop the series. In fact, I'm working on a series that I had started way back in the 80s. I had just a little bit material, and so I'm still developing it from that because it was still, it's still in my system, mm-hmm. but it just wasn't the right time to birth it because I was under different.
You know, Dennis, I think so many people listening only dream of being able to keep their dreams alive as you have over the years with this constant noting down of your images and your mm-hmm. desires for projects and to continually execute them and, as you say, to keep doing different series and to continue to change as an artist and develop as an artist.
Well, you know what, Miss Judith? It's a matter of prioritizing. You know, a lot of things that people do, I've always, I made choices. And it's the passion that I have for what I do that keeps me going and making all these choices, you know, to do my work. There's a need, you know, it's a survival need for me. But I do a lot of other things to keep me going economically. But the vision is king in my life, not me. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, that's what I'm reading. All I'm doing is reading the small prints on my soul. That's all I'm doing. I'm trying to read it. It's all there for us. Mm-hmm. All we have to do is read the fine prints.
You just mentioned soul, and mm-hmm. that is the title of the book, The Soul mm-hmm. Exchange. Who came up with that title? That's yours.
Well, actually, we used to have a band that never succeeded.
Oh.
And we came up with it. Many years, and I'm a kind of a person, I'm a recycled person.
Okay? That's a good thing to do.
Yeah, I'm a recycled person because I'll take things that people take for granted and I'll make it. I always try to, you know, even as an artist, when I had my first studio, I didn't have no electricity, I didn't have no running water, you know, but nobody knew that. And for me, it wasn't even necessary that they did know it. Mm-hmm. What was necessary, I was getting the work done, mm-hmm. and that comes from Mama, the work ethic, mm-hmm. you know, and I've always tried to make the image. Make what I do mm-hmm. important. So a lot of little things that people say, you know, a lot of times I didn't have money for supplies. I had three jobs growing up. I worked for the Tackleport Printing for scrap paper. I worked for Rex Landry Office Supplies, and he would give me $7.50 a week. And after school, and saying, you know, if I, you know, he would give me a Peacock watercolor set or something like that, you know, or a brush or two. But I just knew where things were, and I never asked him, hey, look, would you mm-hmm. give me this? No. I created the environment mm-hmm. so that I could get what I needed to get.
And you were using things and recycling them.
Yes.
And so I'm going to ask, where does the name Soul Exchange, was that the name of a band?
Mm-hmm.
That was an... And have you used that idea in your art?
Well, I always liked the idea of a soul.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And early on in my work, I always had a circle, and because it meant something to me, you know. And mm-hmm. Then I got into colors, and I started to do a little research about colors and how colors affect our emotional state. And some of my paintings, you know, the early one had green because green was more of a healing color. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then I had blues and violets. And it wasn't like I was just using them just to splash them on a mm-hmm, canvas. Mm-hmm. I actually did some research and wanted certain colors that expressed what the ideals, without being religious or without being, you know.
Heavy-handed.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And not imposing, but proposing mm-hmm. that with my work. Because mm-hmm. I look at my work like a proposal, you know, like you don't force anybody to marry. You mm-hmm. you propose to them. And that's what good art should do. Good art should. It's a proposal, you know, to give a person mm-hmm. a way in or way out mm-hmm. to see something different.
A soul exchange.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly.
Perfect.
Exactly.
Perfect title for this book.
Exactly.
And we are talking about the book Soul Exchange, The Paintings of Dennis Paul Williams, just published by the UL Press. And my guests in the studio are the artists Dennis Paul Williams and Philip Gould, who photographed the paintings and also photographed the artist. Some great, great pictures of the artist. Their book, the book is out, and there will be a book signing tomorrow afternoon from 4 until 6
at
the University Art Museum. There will be copies of the book as well as paintings of Dennis's that people can see.
Right.
And are they paintings, examples that are in the book as
well?
I have
one that I have framed up for the thing. But I like the idea of not having, you know, giving them an opportunity to come and meet me, you know, in my studio or, you know, in my own setting by appointments. You know, I like the idea of that because I think it gives them the feeling, the atmosphere, you know.
But tell us about your studio. Philip has an absolutely gorgeous photograph of you standing in front of your studio. So it's a studio that people can visit. They can make appointments.
Mm-hmm. By appointments only.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's on the main highway. If you imagine the road going from Broussard, where 182 and Highway 90 cross, and then there's a little road to St. Martinville. Once you come into town, it's on the left. It's on the right hand side, and it's an Acadian style house, very historic looking house, white, and there it is.
With these lovely lilac doors.
Oh yeah, very distinctive.
And you know what he captured there, Dennis? Just looking at this photograph, that stillness that you were talking about in your paintings, that quietness, that stillness. That's what I feel when I look at that portrait of you on the porch of your studio there.
Well, I'm not surprised with Philip's ability to take things and...
I can only photograph what's there, Dennis.
It's an exchange of artist souls here.
You're so humble, Philip.
That is just lovely. And he photographed your paintings beautifully, but he also photographed you as well, equally commensurate.
I can't say enough about Philip Gould.
I can't say enough about Dennis, and it's been a real pleasure to work with him. You know, it's an ongoing process. I mean, Dennis and I have talked about collaborating for a good while.
A long time.
And I say, it didn't.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't the right moment.
I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. And then when this project came up and the possibility, I said, that's it.
I said to when I spoke to James, I said, that's who I wanted to do my.
And you talk about James Wilson at the
Yale
Press.
That's right. I made it clear. I said, you know, because he knows how to make a good book.
Well,
they do. Well, Philip, tell us just a bit about the challenges of photographing paintings.
Photographing paintings. The challenges of photographing paintings, you have to light them. You have to make sure the color and the tonality is accurate or at least representational. Mm-hmm. Nothing is ever exactly accurate. Not only is the digital image the variation, but then you have the printed image, and so you always want to, as one printing representative told me years ago, you want to reproduce the likeness of the image, and so that's always the goal. And Dennis and I, technically it's a matter of just lighting it and making sure that it's all evenly, the tonality is even all across the space. Sometimes the paintings are quite large. They take two people to get onto the easel, and and sometimes they're not, and then we would just go through it's really funny. There's a lot of times when it's not, I think that one should be it. It's like that thing is talking to the painting is talking to me. Mm-hmm. Said, it's like when I go to a store, I don't say I want to buy that. That thing is talking to me, saying, I belong in your home, and so, okay, good enough. And so there were often instances like that. But we worked together, and the process was an interesting one as well, because we started with one particular style of paintings at Dennis, the watercolors with pencil and mixed media, and they're very evocative. And then as we're getting through with that, suddenly Dennis produces these other very intensely colored acrylics pastels. Pastels. And they're at the end of the book. And I said, okay, well, this is good because we have a little contrast. And so we're doing that. And just about the time I think we're done, suddenly this whole
new series.
out of seemingly nowhere, is a whole new series of very vivid, intensely colorful watercolors. No, oils, huh?
Right.
Appears, and we I said, well, Dennis, we're not done.
This is
part of what you're about, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so and so it was just an ongoing process, and organic in a lot of ways, and had a life of its own, and you know, get on the roller coaster and go for and take the ride, because you know, you don't know where you're going to end up, but you know it's going to be an interesting one. So there we are.
Well, I think that title, The Soul Exchange, is even more evocative of what happened here, this organic relationship.
Well, you know, Ms. Judith, too, about Philip and the relationship that we have, or even before the book, I think, too, with this project, I learned a tremendous amount of stuff about that you think you know about yourself that you couldn't have quite seen, you know, because there's so much in your face that you really don't see it unless somebody, you know, intelligent as Philip is, and you know, he kind of, you know, looks at things, the edges of things and little things, you know. It's like having another artist look through a microscope, and he's kind of saying, look, oh, you forgot this. This could be, you know, this is part of you, and this should be, this side of you should be seen too. And so he brought that aspect out in me of saying, look, that's another part of you.
Second perspective is a part of collective wisdom. Mm-hmm. Not only are we having his whole life, work and perspective, but you're having a second set of eyes, and actually James too, Wade, James Wilson, the editor of the Press.
Yeah, absolutely.
To a degree, not nearly as thoroughly as Dennis and I work together, but you know, and you know, it, as I said, it's organic, and we came to this. And the interesting thing as well in the book was the sequencing of it. You know, how do we create a narrative? How do we create a visual? Mm-hmm. And you know, that actually one page flows to the next, and
it's like
you talk about exchange. It's a bit of a journey as well. Mm-hmm. And
you, it's not chronological.
No. I think in some sense it is, because it's emotionally chronologically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the book is kind of like a large meditation more than anything else. It's kind of like a big.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. like you know, from you know, and I think he kind of read this, because Philip spent a lot of time, you know, images, and I would go there and say, well, how does this look? And he'd have it a little different, and we kind of, you know, jog. And, you know, working with edges and understanding exactly how many images to have on the page, because it's not like a, you know, sometimes people make book and what it looks like is a high school graduation book kind of thing. You know, sometimes as an artist, you want to have all your stuff showing, but you can't have it like that because people don't look at things that way, especially art. You want to kind of have a retrospective, but a creative retrospect of your work that doesn't say retrospect, but that says life and balance, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, one of the things that Philip kind of got, we got that together. The idea is that we needed something that made it for what it is.
Yeah, it should not say retrospective. It should be retrospective. And,
yes.
You know, I think that it just is part of the territory. It comes.
Well, and it's like being a good curator at a museum. I was thinking that as I was looking through. It was like meditatively walking through a gallery where the paintings are so perfectly chosen and placed in that gallery. And you can stop and look as long as you like. And you're being led along something, but you're not aware of what that is. It's not obvious what the pattern is.
Right.
Well, the pattern is you keep turning the page.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Or you go to the next painting.
That's right.
It's a subconscious thing that has to have that flow that says, hey, look, let me see what's the next. You know, it's adventure. It should be like an adventure, an adventure. You know, you look at this page and say, well, then you go through the book and you say, maybe I need to look at it. You know, and I think we created a book that, you know, it's not a one-time thing. You go and look at it and you feel, I want to look at it again. That's the attempt. And I think, along with James, I think we turned out a really good product, and I'm really proud of it.
I think you all did. And I want to tell people who are just tuning in that the product we're talking about is the book Soul Exchange, the paintings of Dennis Paul Williams, and my guests are the artist Dennis Paul Williams and Philip Gould, who photographed both the paintings.
Basically produced the book.
Produced, yeah. Yes. Wow. And I do also want to go back a little bit to your photography of these paintings, because I think a lot of people don't understand how difficult that is, the description he did of making sure that your paintings are glowing, that they are, that's almost like they're illuminated on the page.
Well, you know, Miss Judith, I'd like to say this, is that I've had some prior experience, and number one, I knew that God was in the plan, because I think Philip that day was on his way to New Iberia and came back from New Iberia. Remember that day you were somewhere coming back?
Sure.
And we were starting the project, and I suggested you, and I got so much information from him about books, you know, and that's another thing. He really understood, you know, that kind of process.
And
it looked like God had the right person in mind. I know he had the right person in mind because
here we are.
I mean,
here you are. And it's the UL Press. It's the two of you. It's the right time in life. I'm not sure anyone could have done a better job on your paintings. Every page is just, it jumps out at you with the colors or the subtlety. It's as if you're looking at the painting.
Ms. Judith, I really want to say this. You know, sometimes in our community, we overlook some people that I can't say enough about Philip and his professionalism. Because I've had a lot of my work photographed in different settings, catalogs and elsewhere. And one of the things that I liked about Philip is the mere fact that not only did he respect the integrity of the work, he respected the integrity of the artist and everything else, and he was willing to go and to see things the way I would like to see it. And that's the mark of greatness, when you can see and have the inner tuition to kind of see a single vision and not a whole bunch of vision. And that's the thing. I think we're very, very, very blessed to have such a great photographer in our community.
Well, and I think anyone who's seen his books knows that that's how he approaches everything, whether it's people or landscape or your paintings as well.
Yeah.
So an amazing collaboration between the two artists here.
I'd like to just one real quick. You know, we're talking about these paintings, and I don't think we've really described them. And I would like to try.
I was kind of trying to jump into that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Philip, why don't you describe for people who don't know Dennis's paintings?
Yeah, and Dennis, I'm sure, will have more to say. I suspect he will. I see these paintings as they are portraits of spirits in their heavenly realm. Simply put, and time and time again, I just feel like they are the spirits, and Dennis has a vision of them, and they're very evocative to me, as every spirit is, they are all very different, very, very evocative. Some are just, you show them to people and they go, whoa, wow, okay. I think that's important for people to understand just what exactly the paintings are that Dennis has been doing. And so, Dennis, that's my take. Go ahead.
Well, I think, too, as an artist, we're given an opportunity to create as the creator in some ways. And we have to be very careful with our emotions, because our emotions is very, very valuable. And as an artist, I've been blessed with the opportunity to transfer and to share my honest emotion on this either canvas or sheet of paper in this little small space that appears sometimes to be pretty big sometimes, but actually it's really small. I take this little dot on my soul And all I try to do is magnify it and to allow other people to participate in this magnification of a part of my truth. And so it's a spiritual exercise for me to exercise this kind of a scale in a sacred kind of way. And so I'm very, very careful to deal with it with respect. And as an artist, that for me, as a visual artist, I'm really, I have to never over disrespect it. You know, when you put something out, make sure that it really represents you, because I have a thing that when I'm painting, I have a practice that I have to live with it first before it has a life. And that's my way of saying, you know, before I put my name on something, that I want to make sure that it's, first of all, that it's honest and that it represents an honest aspect of all my life, because that's what a good painting should do. It should bring out the artist to every edge. You know what I mean? Bring it out into the opening and allow another light or lights to kind of participate in this awareness.
I think people will feel that in every page of this book. I think they will feel what you're talking about, and anyone who has ever seen any of your paintings understands what you're saying. And another aspect of it, just as you're talking, it's because I'm sure there are many people curious, and as they go through this book, nearly all of your figures have closed, their eyes are closed, which was a little curious to me at first, but it almost allows the emotion you're talking about to not, you're saying you don't want to impose it on people, you're sharing it, that even though some people say the eyes are the window to the soul, with their eyes closed, there is a kind of a gentleness and a humility and a non-imposition of yourself, that there is this lovely peacefulness in your expressed emotions.
Well, thank you. I think for me, keeping the eyes closed, allow people to say, you know, this is more than just about what I see. You know, this is about what I feel. What I'm trying to do is sort of like, rather than I'm speaking, we are speaking. You know, I really want people to understand that it's about putting yourself there too. You know, because often I tell people, I say, you know what? At all costs, protect your peace of mind. Nothing is worth your peace of mind. And so that's basically, and it's not religious. It's not, it's about the concept of love. It's about the concept of peace.
Well, and you get the sense that all of these figures are protecting their peace. They are protecting their peace of mind, and you feel that. And it's almost like every painting, I think when people's eyes are closed, you also think of prayer. And I would imagine most people looking at these paintings have a feeling of prayer, even if they're not able to articulate it in that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a delicate walk, you know, and for me, it's part of my palette. You know, like some people, they like, you got to have green, yellow, a certain kind of yellow. And for me, I have to have this early awakening before I could wake my artwork up. It's sort of like going to someone that you care for and you're waking them up. You don't want to wake them up too roughly. You want them to know that you care about them, so you do it with compassion. And it's sort of like every time I do an image, I'm going to this bed. I'm going to wake someone up that I love and I care for. And I want them to be, you know, to experience that care, because I respect their space. Well, I feel the same way with my art. You know, I do my meditation in the morning. Basically, I go to church in the morning for me, not to express something, but for me, because I like to start the best of my day, give the best of my day, you know, to my meditation, to my worship. And so my work has to take on who I am. And, you know, that's what art's supposed to do. It's supposed to bring out what you are and how, what part that you, what role you want to play, you know, as far as being human, you know. Because after all, we're the only species that can interpret our behavior. You know, we're on this higher plane that, you know, animals can't do. We can't, animals can't do something and say, oh, I shouldn't do that again. We the only beings can do it. So with my art, I'm really rehearsing my fate, you know, but in a way of saying that I'm not trying to win anybody over from it. I just want it to be for what it is.
No, because you sense that there's a universal, timeless quality all of your paintings.
Thank
no matter
you.
How you start your meditation,
you've
not imposed anything upon people, and anyone can look at these paintings and feel that same sense of peace and meditation. Again, if you are tuning in, my guests, Dennis Paul Williams and Philip Gould, have just produced a book with the UL Press called Soul Exchange, The Paintings of Dennis Paul Williams. It's absolutely gorgeous. Philip photographed the paintings, and there's some other lovely photographs of Dennis in his studio. Daryl Bork wrote an introductory essay, as did Philip.
I wrote a profile on Dennis, and then Daryl did an essay on, you know, on his art itself.
And I have some prose in it.
Some poetry that Dennis did too. So
that's a lovely little coda there between the paintings.
Right.
The book is available now through the UL Press, and if you are available tomorrow afternoon from 4 until 6.
We're available.
Yes, you are available. I'm speaking to the greater audience.
Oh, that's
if you out there are available from 4 to 6 tomorrow at the Hilliard University Art Museum.
St. Mary's Street.
St. Mary's Street, corner
Boulevard.
Of St. Mary, near the,
by Girard
the Hilliard
Park.
University Art Museum. People will find it. There will be a book signing. Dennis Paul Williams and Philip will be there.
Sure.
And there will be paintings of Dennis's as well. And you can talk with Dennis and get your book signed.
And I'd like to say, Ms. Judith, I think that you have graced this radio station so beautifully with your voice and
Thank you, Dennis, presentation.
I certainly appreciate the opportunity to exchange this wonderful openness with you.
Well, I appreciate that, and I have as well. Very grateful that the two of you could be here today and produce this gorgeous book for all of us to be able to consistently share in Dennis's work.
Thank you both.
And if you want more information, the UL Press website has information on the book and how to get it. But tomorrow, 4 to 6, the Hilliard University Art Museum
and
here
I,
on campus.
Can I mention one more thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nathan William and the Zydeco Cha-Chas, I don't think he would forgive me if I would say it, wouldn't say it. He's got a new record out, New Road.
And you're on it, too.
Yes, I am on it. And I just want to say one thing. I think that it's a fine record. And he's a fine, fine talent.
Well, and he made a pledge to us the other day. He donated to Care of Yes. So thanks so much, Nathan
Speaking
Williams.
Speaking of pledge,
it is Pledge Week.
And we should do a pledge pitch.
You may, Philip.
I think folks should call up and donate to KRVS. Better yet, they should call up and set up a plan where they get a deduction every month. It's all but painless, and it's ongoing, and it's
it,
a very – I gave up this year-to-year business, and you know, just let the, let it happen between – the KRVS computer and the My Bank computer,
and
everybody's happy, and it's consistent, and it's actually far more stable way of supporting the station.
I'd like to say this too. All you out there in radio land, remember when you give, you're depositing into your future. That is your future. Whatever you give, that is your future. And remember this, exercise what is truth. And what is truth is honesty, and that's what the radio station had. Now, let's be real now. All you people out there, let's be real. Get out there, give something so that you can have something for your future.
I'm going to have you back every fundraiser, Dennis Paul Williams. You can deposit into your future by calling 337-482-5787, 482-KRVS. And you can be a sustaining member like Philip or a one-time member. We accept all. And we're just so grateful to have this opportunity to share the culture with the community, whether it's art, music, language. We're very grateful for that opportunity. But we need your help. We can't do it without you.
Next time, what you need to do is when you're ready, I will donate a painting. And we can do something really grand.
We're going to talk for next fundraiser.
Yes,
that'll
indeed.
Be wonderful.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed.
Well, listen in for all of our fundraisers, and Dennis Paul Williams will be a part of those in the future. We really appreciate the two of you coming by.
Pleasure.
For all of your work and your artistry, and we're grateful to be a part of it. 337-482-5787 or online at krvs.org. Very easy to get us there. Or you can drop in, make your pledge in person. We're always happy to talk with our listeners and give them a tour of the studio.
All right.
Dennis?
Make it happen now.
All right. Well, we're going to go into some music now, and we hope that you'll get to the telephones or your computer. Thank you both.
All right. You're welcome.